the show.
Hey everyone, and welcome to The Boundless Show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, in the studio with Stephen Mott. Hey guys.
Hey Lisa.
Hi Lisa.
Hey, we have a great show today, beginning with part one of an interview I did with our Screwtape Letters guys. If you don't know Focus on the Family Radio Theater, you should, because this is our latest venture. And Screwtape stars the voice of Andy Serkis, who was Gollum in Lord of the Rings, and he does an amazing job. In fact, so amazing that my coworkers who are listening to it are scared and cannot listen to it alone. So that, in addition to the fact that it is about the devil, makes it awesome, and I think you need to listen to it. So that's part one of that interview today, and then Steve and I are going to chit-chat with you guys out there about what it's like to just be asking girls out and getting shot down. It is literally one of our number one questions that we get from you guys. So we want to encourage you and give you some practical helps in that direction. But first of all, we want to talk about something that is news, breaking news, maybe not quite so breaking, but happened this week here at Focus on the Family, and that is that in the wake of our board meeting out in Georgia, Dr. Dobson and Shirley have announced that they are officially going to continue and I think kind of culminate their transition here at Focus on the Family by stepping away from the broadcast and the ministry really altogether after about 33 years of service and quite frankly founding this organization. So I can't even imagine when I heard that it just made me think how difficult that must be. Because, you know, we've always heard here that Focus on the Family is not about the Dobsons. Dr. Dobson has said that himself. His name is not on this building anywhere. And I'm just so impressed with how he has shepherded this ministry over three decades and really grown it to what it is today. And that is an organization that has over 230 million people worldwide that are part of its audience, as well as having an impact on the culture, as well as having an impact on public policy, and most importantly, on the lives of individuals and individual families. For those of you who don't know, because I like to say it very often, the mission of Focus on the Family is to cooperate with the Holy Spirit in disseminating the gospel to as many people as possible and to use the family as a vehicle with which to do that. So I love that that's our mission. Mm-hmm. It's not about our programs. It's not about the Dobsons. It's not about all that. But still, we are in the midst of now a transition that is, I think, for many of us here at Focus, quite sad. What did you guys think when you heard the news?
You know, it's almost like you think of any big company that was built around a person. I mean, you know, General Electric was built around Edison and that, you know, Alexander Graham Bell starting the phone company, and that you associate people so strongly with a mission and a ministry. But Dr. Dobson's always said it's not about a man, that it really is about this ministry of family, and that he really has shown graciousness in being able to build an institution that can last beyond him. And there will be a day where God calls him home, and that we want to hope that we can still do great ministry to family. And so I think he's really tried to do things to put that in place. But that it's still hard. It is still hard when you associate so much of the good work Focus has done with Dr. Dobson. And if it weren't for Dr. Dobson's vision and interest in young adults, we wouldn't be doing this podcast today or wouldn't have the Boundless website. And so we do still have so much association with him personally, even though he would say, you know, it's ultimately about that mission and working with God in the area of family.
Well, I was shocked. I mean, I knew the transition was coming, but I didn't know when. And just to hear that he has 4 months left on the radio and the broadcast, it was shocking. It made me think back to when I first heard Dobson on the radio. I didn't grow up in a Christian household, and I just, you know, when I started listening to him, I just so wished that my parents would have heard him. And it's almost like our interview with KJ when he said, you know, radio is effectual. It changes people. And I had that thought when I first started listening to Focus on the Family Radio about Dobson. So I have a lot of great memories, and it's just been great being able to work here and to benefit from all that he's done and he's created and his legacy. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was a bit of shock for me.
I think it's amazing. I mean, I think people, especially our generation and younger, underestimate the impact that Dr. Dobson has had, not only on families, but on the evangelical scene. You know, I mean, as someone who was in the PR shop here at Focus, we get constantly those lists of like top evangelicals, mm-hmm. and Dr. Dobson is always at the top. I mean, we have people who have come. My former assistant came here from Oregon specifically to work at Focus on the Family because it was her dream, because she got saved after listening to the broadcast, and her husband left her with her kids, and Dr. Dobson was kind of the father figure that she pulled in with all of his advice to help her raise her kids. I mean, I think people underestimate that. And I mean, the fact that we have over 250,000 visitors who come here every year in their RVs, and they like plan their vacations around Focus on the Family because what Focus has meant to them in their own families. And I just think it really speaks to Dr. Dobson's legacy and all that he has done. I know that if I were him, I would be like, this is my ministry, and I'm going to tell people what to do, and they're going to do what I want to do, you know? So that is why God has not raised me up to be in charge of Focus, apparently. Well, that's just my own little promotion. But no, I think it's huge. And I think that, you know, for those people who have tuned in now for 30 years, and many of the people who are in our listening audience and who read Boundless were those kids that were the products of Dare to Discipline and were the products of the film series and all of that. I mean, their parents got to know Dr. Dobson very well. And I think that we could say that as a generation, probably the reason you're reading Boundless and listening to this show is because you heard about Focus on the Family, because your parents were like, listen to this.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. So I think it's huge. Yeah.
Well, and Focus on the Family and Dr. Dobson both need prayers. This is still a really interesting time, and they're are families that are in desperate need for some encouragement and support and biblical wisdom. And Focus on the Family is going to try to be even more innovative in reaching the next generation of families. And Dr. Dobson still has a lot of work potentially that God's going to be doing through him in the next years. But it's always at a time of transition that the enemy can stir up a lot of mischief. And we really could use prayers to be able to keep doing God's work and what Focus on the Family's doing, and then how God continues to use Dr. Dobson even as he's not as actively involved in the ongoing mission of Focus on the Family.
Mm-hmm. And it'll be exciting to see what the broadcast looks like after Dr. Dobson is gone. I mean, he's irreplaceable, but Focus on the Family does this really well. So I'm sort of excited about where it's going to go and what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's just cool. And as you alluded to, Steve, Dr. Dobson, I think, has been pretty explicit in saying he's not retiring. He's doing very well. So it's not like he's just going to, you know, sit home and read magazines and play golf. He's going to be out there. You will see him around. We can't even field all of the requests he gets for speaking engagements, for media appearances. I mean, it's some full on craziness. So I'm sure he'll hopefully be freed up to do some more of that, as well as finish this book, Bringing Up Girls. People, can we get this book out on the market? Okay. That's going to be coming out, as well as, a bunch of other stuff that he'll be doing, articles and such. So I think that's cool. And he's going to spend some time with his little grandson. So he wants to do that as well. So he'll be out and about. We never did get him on the Boundless show, which I think we need to work on. I think we need to do that because, quite frankly, he needs to be a part of this.
But he has done some intros for us.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Well, he did that, but that's not enough. I need to sit down with him. I need a heart to heart. I need to be like, doctor, let's talk. So hopefully we'll do that in the future. If we do, we'll promo it similarly to how I promoed Bill Gaither, who was also awesome. But anyway, I think it's cool, guys. And I think we'll have more of Dr. Dobson's legacy showing up, not only here at Focus on the Family in general, but even here at Boundless, because what he has contributed is important. And we want to stay true to the biblical principles upon which this ministry was founded. So thanks, guys, for sharing your thoughts.
Thanks, Lisa.
Wormwood!
Uncle!
What are you doing?
I'm sitting here.
Where is your patient?
Inside.
Inside where?
That church.
Exactly. Your patient has become a Christian.
Oh, he has.
Yes, do not indulge the hope that you will escape the usual penalties. Indeed, in your better moments, I trust you would hardly even wish to do so.
Yes, Uncle. Oh, dear.
In the meantime, we must make the best of the situation. Hundreds of these adult converts have been reclaimed after a brief sojourn in the enemy's camp and are now back with us.
Truly?
You are an imbecile.
Sorry.
All the habits of the patient, both mental and bodily, are still in our favour. One of our great allies at present is the church itself.
Oh?
Do not misunderstand me. I do not mean the church as we see her, spread out through all time and space, rooted in eternity, terrible as an army with banners. That, I confess, is a spectacle which makes our boldest tempters uneasy, but fortunately it is quite invisible to these humans. All your patient sees is the half-finished, sham Gothic building, and when he goes inside, he sees the local grocer with a rather oily expression on his face, bustling up to offer him one shiny little prayer book containing a liturgy which neither of them understands, and one shabby little hymn book containing a number of religious lyrics, mostly bad and in very small print. And when he gets to his pew and looks around him, he sees just that selection of his neighbours who, until now, he has avoided. You want to lean pretty heavily on those neighbours.
Right.
Make his mind flit to and fro between an expression like the body of Christ and the actual faces in the next pew. It matters very little, of course, what kind of people that next pew really contains. You may know one of them to be a great warrior on the enemy's side. No matter. Your patient, thanks to our Father below, is a fool. Provided that any of those neighbours sings out of tune, or have boots that squeak, or double tins, or odd clothes, the patient will quite easily believe that their religion must therefore be somehow ridiculous.
Okay, for this week's culture segment, I am in the studio with Dave Arnold and Paul McCusker. Hi, guys.
Hi. Hey, how's it going?
Did you say culture?
Culture segment.
I didn't realize that's what we're
doing. I know.
Doing.
We have a segment. I better leave right now, then.
No culture at all. Except actually what you're growing in your lungs, but besides that.
You don't want to let people.
Well, we call it that because it's kind of the segment where we try to address kind of what's out there as far as like thinkers and doers, whether they're authors, artists, church leaders, newsmakers, stuff like that. So hopefully you guys fall at least into one of those categories. Otherwise, we will just cut off this interview and move on.
Yeah. All of the above.
All of the above. Okay, well, Dave and Paul are part of our Focus family here, and they head up basically a number of different ventures that are audio-related here at Focus on the Family. Many of you know I've talked about Adventures in Odyssey a few times here on the show. And in fact, we just did a segment on toys and toys heading into Christmas where I was like, none of the toys that are out there, I even understand. They require engineering degrees. They just blaze me away as far as what they even are. So instead, get Adventures in Odyssey for your kids. Okay.
So right.
We support that. But what we want to talk about today is kind of our newest venture here, and that is in our radio theater camp. For those of you who don't know what radio theater is, it is basically audio dramatizations of great classic stories. And someone please give me a shout out as to what some of those have been.
We started off with the Christmas Carol was the first, moved on to Bonhoeffer, told the story of that during World War II. We moved on to Chronicles of Narnia, so we've done all of those. We have done quite a few classics.
And you did The Hiding Place.
Hiding Place.
And Mitford series.
Mm-hmm. Mitford, yeah. We got a lot of stuff out there.
A lot of stuff. So your newest venture, which just released this month, is The Screwtape Letters by C.S. Lewis. So we're returning to C.S.L. which is great.
And the Screwtape action figures as toys for Christmas.
I'm
encouraging all the kids out there to go out and buy Screwtape, Wormwood, and all of those hellish figures.
Those will be coming. And then you can also get C.S. Lewis just like sitting in an armchair with a pipe, and like the pipe is maybe removable or whatever.
And it was one of those bubble pipes. It wasn't real tobacco.
That's good.
He never really smoked.
That's good. Well, okay, we've already talked about Screwtape a little bit on the show here because we wanted everyone to get it as soon as it came out. And quite frankly, this demographic is all about C.S. Lewis, all about Lord of the Rings, which ties in here, which we're going to talk about in a minute, and just kind of this entire, I guess, genre of literature and thought. You know, everyone, I mean, what millennial or Xer hasn't had to take a class on C.S. Lewis, especially if they went to a Christian college, which I did. And so I think it's cool that we have actually dramatized now The Screwtape Letters, starring Andy Serkis, mm-hmm. who voiced Gollum in Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. So I think that is cool. I want to find out first from you guys, what made you decide to have this as your next project? Why is this the one that was done?
Well, it's been on our shopping list from the very beginning, the wish list. When Radio Theater started, there were titles that we really wanted to do, and Screwtape Letters was one of them. So it's taken us 10 years to get there, but finally we had the convergence of all the right things happen so that we were able to get the rights to do it. We could figure out how to dramatize it. The casting led us to great people.
It's a bit daunting to think about dramatizing the Screwtape Letters because it's not strictly an easy drama. It's a series of letters. So mm-hmm. you might tell them how you sort of...
Well, the big thing was figuring out how to go in scene. A couple of things about doing a drama. One, it would be more characters than just Screwtape. Otherwise, that's just a book on tape. And to turn the implied relationship between Screwtape and Wormwood into a vocal relationship, one that you actually will hear mm-hmm. dramatically, and even a story arc for them, where their relationship starts, where it hits some bumps, where it winds up. And then within that, we have the relationship with what's the patient, who Wormwood is trying to corrupt, and Screwtape is giving Wormwood the advice on how to do that. And so there were all the other scenes related to that. How do we draw the patient into the drama so that we hear him, we see his relationships with the human beings and how they're affected by what Screwtape and Wormwood are doing. And all of that then gives us more insight, I think, into what the Screwtape Letters is than a straight book on tape, of which there are many out there. Mm-hmm. There are several. And we were determined that we weren't even going to try to compete with those. We wanted to do something that was more truly a performance, yeah. A drama.
Yeah. Well, and definitely makes it unique. So tell us a little bit about approaching Andy Serkis on this then, because he is actually a self-described atheist. So, I mean, it's pretty much, I'm assuming you didn't go, hey, let's just go out for coffee and tell you about Focus on the Family and our mission to, you know, cooperate with the Holy Spirit and disseminating the gospel to everyone. So be a part of it. What got him interested in the project?
Well, yeah, we have to back up a little bit. Our casting process for everything, we don't ask first thing, is this a believer? Mm-hmm. What we're after would be the best talent to play the role that we're trying to cast. And if they are a believer, or if we have secondary characters who are believers who we hope will be kind of shoring up what we're doing with prayer, that's great. But that's not the criteria. We considered a number of different actors like Jeremy Irons and Ben Kingsley.
We had a shopping list of probably 20 different names. And at some point early on in the process, we actually made offers to these people. I think we made an offer to Jeremy Irons first. He was the first option for us.
Hmm. Yeah.
But what was interesting, I think, for all of us was that it just didn't seem to be the right timing. We were originally slated to record over the summer months last year, and every person that we came across to make an offer, none of them were able to do it. It wasn't they didn't want the project. They weren't able. They were either in a place somewhere or out of the country or whatever. And so we wound up having to bump our recording session to October with the hope that we'd eventually get somebody who could do it. And that was the process where we began to think of Andy, because Andy originally we were discussing as an option for the character of Wormwood instead of Screwtape.
Yeah, and Andy, the problem was that Andy's, what we heard of Andy was so powerful, we couldn't imagine Andy being Wormwood to a Screwtape that could actually match him in terms of the power of his vocalization. And by the way, one of the other problems we ran into, and I just thought of this the other day, was that some of the actors who considered the role, and again, it's a well-known role. A lot of people, whether you're atheist or whatever you claim to believe, know Screwtape and know the Screwtape Letters as classic literature. But I think the fact that we had like a 250-page script, which had a lot of Screwtape through the whole thing.
Oh, you'd see blocks, full-page blocks.
Very mm-hmm. daunting. Very daunting, I think, to any actor who would go mm-hmm. in, look at this, and try to figure out how to make
that work.
But
weren't half of those pages just him giving like a diabolical laugh? It was just like, ha, 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 ha.
Yeah, but you know, to do that differently on each page is very mm-hmm. hard. These guys are actually very good at what they do. Mm-hmm. The other thing was that Andy, we presented it to him, and he had about a two-week period where he was considering it, had some family things he was dealing with his father's health. And we were on pins and needles because we had scheduled to record in December and as early as, I think it was, we were like the first or second week of November, still waiting to hear from him, believing that he would do something more than what we were expecting. And that's the other thing that happens with us with these actors. You cast in the hopes of getting somebody who will at least match what you were hearing in your head. But what we ideally want will be actors who come into the studio and will go beyond that, take whatever it is in front of them and turn it into something so much more. And we really believed that Andy would surprise us, I think. We suspected very early on that whatever he was going to do in the studio was not going to be predictable. And that proved to be, I think, absolutely right.
Yeah, it was interesting. It was an interesting case study just watching him do the acting, because you could almost see him pulling a different trick out of his bag of, you know, vocal ideas all the way through, and it was just masterful. He had an endless supply of ideas, and it just kept you engaged, which, you know, if you've read the Screwtape Letters, you know that it can be hard to follow sometimes, but he did a phenomenal job just keeping you engaged with his vocal technique and then making sure that the content was understandable.
Yeah, and that was the toughest. He said at the end of the first day, we weren't even sure he was going to come back. The truth is he was so exhausted by the end of the first day, and he said, "This is the hardest thing I've ever had to do." And I said, "Wait a minute, you crawled around on a soundstage for like 5 years as Gollum, and this is harder than that?" And he said, "Absolutely, I'm shattered. I'm absolutely shattered trying to pull this off." Because we would go through. I mean, it was a lot of fun because, well, it was cruel in a way, because we would be talking to him and he'd be going through the lines and he would be reading through it. And it would be an amazing performance. But we'd be on the other side of the glass thinking, have no idea what he just said. So we'd hit the button and we'd say, "Well, Andy, that was masterful performance, but we had no clue what you just said." And he would go, "Oh, I'm glad to hear you say that, because I had no clue what I just said." And then we'd have to go back and do it all over again. And you could understand why it was so grueling for him as an actor to perform that material and make sense of it.
Yeah. Well, I know the Screwtape product actually includes a making of DVD, which I've seen. And in it, he describes really what it's like to have to take home that character every night and just the difficulty of having to express that each day. And I'd like to know from you too, what you recall as some of the highlights of actual taping, whether with him or with the cast as a whole, or just what were some of the unexpected moments out there? It was actually, you recorded in London, correct?
Right.
So you went out there with London, and I know Jeffrey Palmer, and there are other well-known actors that are on this production. So what were just some of the highlights for each of you?
Well, I think some of it, I think, was just the daily experience of it, from point to point, wondering what Andy was going to do next. That alone, his total performance was a highlight. One of the unsung heroes is the actor, Bertie Carvel, who played Wormwood. And it's a thankless task to play Wormwood. It's like playing Watson to Sherlock Holmes. I mean, you're always kind of the second one who's asking all the questions in order to get the answers from the main character. And yet, Bertie brought he didn't let that take away from his performance. In fact, I think he rose to what he was trying to do, to make it into a real character, not just somebody who's going to bounce off of Screwtape the entire time. And if you listen to it, I think his performance really stands out, because he took what some might consider fairly inane lines and turned them into something real. And that was always a surprise to me, because I sat listening and thinking, I wouldn't know how to do this if I were sitting behind the microphone trying to make those lines into something more than "so what did you do next" kind of things, which could be fairly innocuous. And it contributes so much, because in a way, Wormwood is us. He's got to ask the questions of Screwtape that we, the listeners, need to ask. And so he made that, I think, very real. I think the fact that we survived it, because some of us were really sick. We dealt with issues, health issues and other issues on this, unlike anything I can remember. I don't know. You have to jump in here, Dave.
Well,
I
throughout the entire process, not just the recording, but through the entire process.
It was edgy. It was almost diabolical in what we were dealing with. And so that was part of the surprise every morning. I seemed to have a low-grade fever during the course of the day, and at night it would turn into something more. And then when I'd go into the studio, I'd feel fine. but as to get the job done. But as soon as we were out of the studio, I seemed to feel sick again. It was just odd, a lot of stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Everything looks tasty, if I may say so.
I do hope the meat isn't dry, John. You know I don't like it overcooked.
I know, Mum, don't worry.
If I'd known you'd be so late coming home from church...
Well, I can't always know how long Reverend Blanchette is going to preach, can I? It's not as if I can stand up and shout, "Pardon me, Reverend, but could you cut it short? My mother's waiting for me at home and the roast is burning in the oven."
Oh.
Please pass the gravy.
I only meant that we've been eating later and later on Sundays, and the meat has been drier and drier since you've been in this church phase.
Phase? Please, Mum, let's not be condescending about it.
Well, I don't know what else to call it.
Then don't call it anything. Would you like some Yorkshire pudding?
Oh, if it's not too much trouble.
It's not too much trouble. Yes.
I thought you'd be pleased.
I am. But you must press home your advantage.
My advantage?
The enemy will be working on the patient from the center outwards, gradually bringing more and more of his conduct under the new standard of his Christianity. It may reach his behavior to the old lady at any moment.
Look, Mum, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to snap.
It's all right, dear.
Ah, you see, you want to get in first.
We are opening up today's inbox, and I'm in the studio with Steve. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Lisa.
Hey. Okay, that's some exciting stuff. We are going to respond to, I don't even have a paper in front of me because I do not have a single question. What we are going to respond to today is a compilation of questions. I don't even think that was the correct use of that term. I can't think, I wanted to
it's
say
like a amalgamation.
I love it. Okay. We're going to do a roundtable on vocab lessons coming up in the near future because usually I'm all about vocab, but I just messed that up. Anyway, we get a lot of letters from guys, and a lot of them, and by a lot, I mean like about 98.75%, have to do with, I'm asking all these girls out and none of them say yes.
Yeah.
What do you think about that, Steve? I think we need to give them some help.
I want to start by encouraging guys that is their job, that it's a man's job to take the risk by being a leader, by showing the kind of leadership he's going to have to show as a Christian husband and dad right now during the dating phase, to continue to step up and be a good steward of opportunities and to take that risk. And to that end, I just want to repeat a quote I think I've shared before on the Balance Show, the Teddy Roosevelt from his In the Arena speech, where he said, "The credit belongs to the man who is in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, et cetera, et cetera, who comes short again and again because there is no effort without error and shortcoming, but who does actually strive to do the deeds, who knows great enthusiasms, the great devotions, et cetera." And it says, "Who at the best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at the worst, if he fails, at least fails while daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who know neither victory nor defeat." So to that end, this is part of risk, of stretching yourself, like any kind of entrepreneurial effort or getting out there in a brutal sports contest. It's doing something where you're only going to taste a certain kind of victory if you continue to stretch yourself. Mm-hmm. Now, that being said, there are this concept of the big leagues, and I think there are some guys who are frustrated because they're striking out. And they just weren't ready for the big leagues. And we've got this article on Boundless by Scott Croft that's called "Brother, You're Like a Six." And it's not meant to be critical or to, you know, really come down on guys who maybe weren't gifted with the same things that other people are, but to realize that so much of our culture encourages them to go after these bombshell beauties instead of thinking about what they bring to the relationship, what they're going to be able to offer. And that they often are striking out in a league that, you know, maybe they overshot to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that there are a lot of guys out there who don't hear the message about risk, or they haven't heard it in a healthy way. So, for example, it's natural to fail in yeah. that, you know, but we so have preached this like anti-failure message that now it's like if you do one thing and you fail, you know, oh my goodness, my self-esteem is just shot, you know, whereas I think that's one thing that you guys, guys here at Boundless are trying to encourage the guys in is to yeah. recognize that, wow, you know, there's actually very much a sense of manliness and of valor, even in doing that, even in failing.
That's so, right. And I would encourage, important. Too, that the goal is important, that men should go after the godliest woman who will have them. Mm-hmm. But that's different from going after the cutest girl in the room or the one that, you know, has all these superficial things that maybe really aren't what a good marriage is made out of. Mm-hmm. But that as you discern character, as you discern someone's godliness and their commitment to their faith in Christ, go for it. Go for the godliest woman you can. But realize she's going to be looking to see what you're bringing to this relationship. She's not just looking, you know, to see if you're bold enough to ask her on a date. Mm-hmm. But if you really are prepared to go the distance and lay your life down in a marriage like Christ laid his life down, and be prepared for the whole package of marriage that you're pursuing there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think it's great when guys are inspired to rise to that challenge. And they will. Usually guys will rise to a challenge when they find, you know, something that they can do and they're inspired to do it. And I just think that's good. I like what Carolyn and Candace talked about on the broadcast when they were on it. I think Carolyn said, you know, women have to trust God by waiting and men have to trust God by risking.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot to be said in that. There's a lot of wisdom in that and, you know, quite frankly, great conversation starters between men and women and whatever. But I think, you know, guys, there are some not hard and fast rules, but there are some definite things to look at. And that is, you know, if you're not in a position to marry, then you don't need to be worrying about whether or not you can ask women out. You have other things that you need to work on and you need yeah. to get those mentors in your life. You know, if you're not holding down a job or if you're not, you know, if you're kind of flitting around and finding yourself, you know, shore up those things and work on those things.
But at the end of the day, the guys can look back and some will be able to point to these go down in flame type failures in asking some girls out. But there are going to be guys who look back and say, that was the most important risk I took in my life, that step I took to try to marry as well as possible. And by taking that risk and putting myself out there, even after maybe coming off rejections shortly before it. And it's worth doing, but it's worth remembering this is all about pursuing the godliest marriage you can pursue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And keeping godliness in account, I will say also that when you ask a girl out and you do it without ambiguity and without weirdness and you've got something to offer and you're normal, you don't have to be awesome, but you have to be normal and you have to be moving towards awesome. That is hot. That is my advice for the day.
There you go.
All right. Well, thanks, Steve, for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, Lisa.
That's awesome. Okay, that's it for this week's show. Again, we always want to hear from you. Write to us at editor@boundless.org as we weigh in on these issues. Give us your thoughts and give us your experiences because we're doing this for you, folks. So that one was specifically for the guys, but as always, we're always navigating these waters together. So that said, join us next time. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of boundless.org. Focus on the family.